I'm Darcy. I study anthropology at McGill. I actually have a question that's mostly provoked by Julie Cohen's speech, but also I think that Ms. Jansdottir, you could actually speak to it. My question is how we construct the self in relation to the state, and specifically I'm talking about us here. You know, there's this sense that we take a certain glee in being more paranoid than other people, or that we're hackers, or that, you know, we're politicians instead of politicians. And I wondered what that means. If we're depending on a state that's broken, how can we reconfigure it? How can we reconfigure an administrative state, which is what Dr. Cohen says that we need to do? If we can't do that because we depend on that brokenness for our self-formation, what do we do? Thanks.
That's a small question. So, I mean, this is really what configuring the network itself was about. So, you know, it's 300 pages long. I could talk about it for a long time. But there are two things that I think we need to pay attention to that are sort of architectural characteristics of the networked information environment. One of which, is what I called operational transparency, which is knowing how it works, right? Knowing where the flows of information are going and what they're being used to do. And it's no mean feat because, as we heard, for example, in Christina's presentation, it has to be mediated by experts, and that presents a whole raft of problems. But then the second thing is what I called semantic discontinuity, right? The idea that you don't have, you know, we're all constructed all the time, but what enables all of the, you know, great creativity and weird eccentricity and, you know, direct democracy to bubble up is the amount of interstitial flexibility that you have within kind of the matrices of social construction. And so it's the relationship to the state that we should want. To have a stateless society, I don't think is what we should want. We may disagree, I don't know, but the relationship that we should want is one characterized by interstitial flexibility or by semantic discontinuity, so that there are all of these ways in which that which is unpredictable can happen.
Yeah. I'm not necessarily advocating for a stateless society. I just think that maybe we can randomly select parliamentarians from the phone book. Seriously, we would be better off right now in Iceland. I think, first we need to understand that the system is not made out of rock. And because the system is very poorly constructed, it might have been very well constructed in the old days, but our societies have become so much more complex, and there are so many more of us, and there are just like this endless patching up laws instead of just rewriting it from scratch with the best possible minds. I think it's also important to remember that when the Patriot Act was passed, it was during times of crisis. They were ready. This is not a very small, tiny little law that could fit in this book. It is massive, and they were ready. So those that want to change our societies, maybe they should start preparing for the next crisis, because the crisis is the energy during times of crisis is the energy for change. And so it is really up to those of us that want to apply changes, to be ready. I think one of the main reasons I got the IME resolution through the parliament is because I was aware of this, that we had a very short window for change. It's much smaller than most people are aware of. That's why governments that come up with a four-year plan are always doomed to fail. And then I think it is important that there is not one individual that will have a solution for this. how we're going to change our systems. This is a collective effort. And I encourage you to exercise thinking 100 years into the future. What sort of future would you like to see? What sort of future would you like to see? What sort of society would you like to live in 50 years, 20 years, 10 years? Don't let the politicians tell you that life is only, you can only have vision for the next 4 years, because that's suitable for them.
Hi, Fenwick McKelvey, Concordia University here. Okay. Really enjoyed the panel, both of you, and I kind of had two questions, one for Julia and one for Birgitta. Julia, it was really fantastic to see this being put forward and talking about this idea of control, and I was wondering, particularly the problem of modulation, right? I was, you know, struck upon, you know, the idea of modulation, particularly as the frame of problematizing this other than privacy. I was wondering if you could expand on that a bit, or any thoughts. And then second, for Birgitta, it was really interesting hearing about the scalable direct democracy platform. It reminded me of the Berlin Pirate Party, which has been talking about liquid democracy, mm-hmm. and the kind of transference of some of the ideas of peer-to-peer file sharing into the political system, or at least that's what they described it as. And so I'm curious, like, is that in dialogue with liquid democracy, or is there a discussion that your colleagues are having about, you know, what it means to be a pirate political party? Okay, thank you very much. Really enjoyed both.
So really, actually, I'm just going to steal a sentence from Kate. So she said prediction becomes production in her talk, and that's really what modulation is, right? So the idea is that you're catering to the individual's preferences by serving them up things in the information environment that are what they want to see, but it becomes prediction, and then it becomes production, and it becomes production of selves. So what relation does that then have to a conception that we might have of privacy? Just really two thoughts on that. So there's been some airtime already today given to what I like to call now the critique from the left, right? The privacy reifies the liberal self, and therefore we can't have it, right? The fact that we like to think that that's what privacy is suggests that the liberal self has really rather a more tenacious hold inside our minds than we ought to be giving it. The problem I want to suggest is the way in which privacy is theorized, and of course, maybe it needs to have a different name, but the privacy, in essence, is a collective and a structural thing, right? It is a function, it is an inverse, it's a function of what I talked about as semantic discontinuity or interstitial flexibility. Without that, you don't have it. And to that extent, it's something that there's a collective interest in. If you prefer to call it by a different name, that's fine too, right? And I think that that's the... that's really a challenge that we have to confront and negotiate to the extent, for example, that we define constitutional rights or that we define human rights within the international human rights framework as rights that individuals bear. It becomes really hard to have this conversation about something that is structural or architectural and affects us collectively. So the international human rights institutions aren't right now doing any better than anything else at figuring this out, but I think that's a conversation that needs to be had.
Yeah, thank you very much for this question. Initially, DSENT is going to be based on both the ideology behind the liquid feedback. There's been some problems with engaging people. There are not enough people using it. So one of the challenges is to figure out are you guys aware of what liquid feedback is? Okay. Anybody that doesn't? Okay, so I'll explain it really quickly. It's a voting system where you transfer your vote to somebody you trust. So let's say that I trust her for privacy issues, that we are on sort of similar wavelength. I would delegate my vote to her. Then if I would notice that she's gone off track, I can always pull back my vote. And that means that it is sort of possible for the general public that doesn't have lots of time to put themselves into every issue to do a voting system based on trust. And the ideal thing, the way I envision it, which is slightly more developed than the pirates in Germany, is that in the end, we would then delegate the votes to parliamentarians when they are voting. If they go off track, we can move them to somebody that is closer to our, you know, if they get bought by a corporation or something, we can take that power, that voting power, from the parliamentarian. Decent is, like, we're working with the Finnish, a group that have been working with the Finnish, one of the Finnish ministries. So they have had, like, created a platform. And then an Icelandic group called Citizen Foundation, they have created a really interesting platform called Better Reykjavik and Better Iceland, where the Better Reykjavik platform has been quite successful in the sense that they managed to get the city of Reykjavik, the council of it, Reykjavik is our capital, to take the five top ideas every month and process them. And now they're also voting on sort of the overlayer budget. And the idea is to get them to allow people to actually have something to say about a larger part of the budget cake. But that is something you need to train people in. It's like people don't take on direct democracy in one day. You have to help people understand their responsibilities in their societies. And then the third element, which is my favorite, is that that we have people from M16 from Spain working with us as well. They're a part of this project. And they have been analyzing the moods of people, like the moods through Twitter and other social media, just before and around the times of protest. And that might give us an indicator of what drives people to want to engage. So it's an incredibly exciting project, and we're working with many people that it's a really interesting group of people, very diverse, lots of activists, but also academians and people that and coders. So it will. I hope that we will manage to get good results. The best result of it is, of course, if enough people participate.
Hi. I have a question about the term privacy. I think personally I'm slightly, you know, focusing on a confusion that's potential in terms of, you know, privacy, my own private information, but also the private sphere in terms of, you know, the corporate. And I think there's some kind of illusion if you go on Facebook that it is actually a public sphere. And it's actually privately owned. And so I think that could be the source of a lot of confusion and a lot of frustration as well, because, you know, I say something publicly, but on a privately owned, on a corporately owned channel. And I think once I do this, I probably signed terms of and conditions already, and so I've signed up to make this public, but it's not public, it's private, because it's owned privately in a corporate way. You know, there is a little bit of a contradiction here, and maybe you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, no, I mean, you're right. It's a term with multiple meanings, and private property versus the public sphere is another one of those meanings, and that may be another indicator that we need a different word, but that's a different thing than saying it's not relevant to talk about this interest that individuals and all of us have. But you're right, and so I don't want to be understood as making a brief for continued use of the word, but it's important to consider, you know, when one is trashing, how much one wants to throw out.
Can I just add to this really quickly? I've been thinking a lot about the concept of privacy, especially because I've had my privacy violated quite a bit by government, and I've been I continuously get the question of has it changed the way you are or the way you do stuff, and maybe one doesn't become immediately aware of it, but I do think it has some sort of impact on anybody. And then I find it to be so interesting that then people go to Facebook, and I remember when I was first using it, I don't know anything about how it was. I remember the first things people were doing were sending flowers, endless flowers and eggs and stuff. Now it's full of kittens. But I find it to be so interesting after I started to think more about it is that, like, I don't think I would put all my photos outside the walls of my home or have them on the bus or what I had for breakfast or whatever, or like people put weird things constantly in the stream. I didn't realize how not private it was until after I became an MP. Then, you know, of course you lose all your privacy. And like if I would post something on Facebook, it was in the news. And maybe everybody would have to have that exercise. Imagine what you put on Facebook would be on the front page somewhere.
And what other people put, right? So I had to have the conversation with my child care provider about how you don't put pictures of my child on your Facebook page. But why, right? So, you know, there's a fairly comprehensive effort that's called for, I think.
Yeah.
We have time for one very brief question, and I apologize to those whose hands have gone up, but we're running short. So if you could be brief, that would be great. It's not you, okay? Well, then, what about you? Can you promise brevity? Okay, there's a promise
of
brevity.
My name is Sam Toda. I enjoyed both speeches. I particularly enjoyed that you spoke for people who cannot speak. My question or comment, recently we are talking about some kind of modernization, or that modernization has stopped. Are your talks about that modernization has stopped, or we are going in different directions?
Thank you.
I think that there is this really interesting element called evolution. And if you put one word in front of it, the R, then you have the word revolution. And we're in these sort of revolutionary times that we had, some of you might have experienced in the 60s, where there are just like this energy and demand for change. And there wasn't really a profound change in the 60s because we weren't ready. We weren't as connected as we are today. The beauty of the one reasons we're living at these times of uncertainty and quickening is because we have access to one another that we never had before. I can be working with somebody in Australia or in Canada, or, you know, I'm here because of the internet. And I'm here hearing all these amazing people speak, and I will have opportunity to speak to many amazing people here that will inspire me and expand my mind. And this is happening to people all over the world, and that is why we are changing. And we have to. We're sort of running out of planet. And so we have to do big stuff together. And we have to start to create a blueprint for the future. I don't know how it's going to be. But it's up to every one of you.
You know what she said. I mean, I think that there's certainly, I think we're going through, there's a transformation underway, but it's, you know, whether you want to call it modernization or the postmodern condition, there are, you know, trees, forests have been killed, arguing about what to call it, and it's astonishingly hard to identify the point of demarcation when you're going through it. Mm-hmm. And so that makes these projects incredibly important, because you can't wait till it's over until you can neatly tie it up in a box and label the transition. Then it's too late, right?
Yeah,
it's now.
Exactly.
Speaking of big stuff, I want to remind people that we do have one more session. Our next speaker will be one of our keynotes, someone many of you know, Rafael Lozano-Hemmer, and I promise you, you're going to want to come back and see what it is that he's going to be showing us. So we are going to take a short break and reconvene at 5 o'clock for that presentation. I strongly encourage you to come back, but before that, please, once again, join me in thanking our two panelists for an excellent discussion.